CBC News has looked at several stories this year focused on campus sexual assault. Now, the Fifth Estate has a new documentary, and tonight we have an excerpt. It may help explain why complaints to police are rare, convictions even more so. In cases that so often hinge on he says, she says, one real-life she lets the cameras roll while getting a preview of the cross-examination likely heading her way. Here's Mark Kelly.
This is the story of Mandy Gray, a PhD student in sociology at York University in Toronto. She's decided to take a gamble that will unfold on camera. It all started in January 2015. Some friends are out at a pub when Gray sends a text to another York grad student asking him to join them. He does. He and Gray will eventually end up at his apartment, where she says he sexually assaulted her. Police lay charges, and now she's awaiting trial. Lawyer David Budd is helping Gray with her case. He's warned her her chances of winning are slim at best.
Out of every estimated 1,000 sexual assaults or episodes of sexual violence, 3 result in convictions. So that's a failure rate of 99.7%. Any organization, public or private sector, that had that success rate would be the laughingstock. And yet, we continue to merrily carry on as if our justice system is actually serving the needs of women in these categories of offenses.
So why do so many cases fail? Just watch. To prepare Gray, Budd stages a mock trial using the real facts of the case. He'll play the lawyer for the accused. They allowed our cameras into the room. What you're about to see is completely unscripted.
Ms. Gray, I'd just like to ask you a few questions.
It's an exceptional insight into what happens when the victim feels like she's the one on trial.
I'm going to suggest to you that you had a level of familiarity with him where having some physical contact, whether it be hand on the shoulder, hand around the shoulder, not something out of the ordinary for you in your relationship to that point. Fair enough?
Yeah.
Cross-examination is a subtle interrogation. Watch as Butt surgically dissects her story and her memory.
And people were drinking. It's a cafe, quite naturally. People are drinking at the cafe. Fair enough?
Yes.
And that includes you?
Yes.
And quite naturally, you don't have a little notebook where you're carefully marking down each milliliter of alcohol that you ingest. Fair enough?
Right.
And so if I were to suggest to you that, as with any person out just for a night, quantities of alcohol consumed inevitably are estimates. Fair?
Yes.
And those estimates can be wrong, either high or low, can't they?
Yes.
10 minutes in, and Butt begins to turn the tables on Gray.
And at a certain point, you actually approach my client and you ask if you can spend the night at his place, don't you?
I did ask, yes.
Yeah. And at the time, you, of course, had an apartment?
Yes.
You're living on your own?
Yes.
And there's nothing preventing you from going back to your apartment that night?
I had a bad experience in a cab a few weeks prior to, so that deterred me from wanting to be in a cab intoxicated alone, so I figured it'd be safer to go to a friend's apartment.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with having a friend ride in a cab with you, though, is there?
I live north, so it made sense, and I had spent the night there before, so it seems appropriate.
Okay. So bottom line, this was a choice of convenience, and you were happy to make that choice, right?
Yes.
And you made that choice knowing that you certainly did have alternatives. That wasn't the only apartment that you could have stayed at. Fair enough?
I guess.
Gray's hesitant answers are an opening for the lawyer to try to create reasonable doubt.
You stayed till about closing time?
Yes, until the lights came on.
Okay. So you really made a night of it. You shut the bar down, in other words, to use a colloquial expression.
Yes.
And I'm going to suggest that staying till the bar closing, you drank till the bar closed.
From what I can remember, yes.
Okay. And when you say from what you can remember, in fairness, you're saying that because your memory of the night is not perfect. Fair to say?
It was a while ago now, so I don't remember when I had my last drink.
Okay. And you were drinking.
And I was drinking.
And like everybody, alcohol has both a disinhibiting effect and a little bit of an effect on your memory. Fair to say?
Yes.
You're like everybody else in that respect, aren't you?
Yes.
And you go back to his apartment as you had planned?
Yes.
And as you had requested?
Yes.
And it's at the apartment where sexual activity takes place that you say was non-consensual.
Yes.
With no physical evidence, this case, like most sexual assaults, comes down to two competing versions. He said, she said, and the she usually loses.
I'm going to suggest to you that that encounter was at your instigation and that it was entirely consensual.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree because I was really confused as to why he would do that to me.
So you were confused about what happened that night, weren't you?
I was confused about why he would do that to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to suggest that you were confused because you regretted engaging in those sexual relations that you had initiated the night before.
I didn't initiate any of it, aside from asking to spend the night at his apartment. That's all I initiated.
Hmm. You did more than initiate that. You went home with him. You had, didn't you?
But that doesn't equate with consent.
Just answer my question. You went home with him.
Yes. I didn't know I was in an unsafe situation.
Right. Because you weren't, were you?
I was.
I'm going to suggest that this is not a case of non-consensual sexual relations. This is a case of consensual sexual relations with someone you knew, with someone you were familiar with, that you subsequently regretted. That's very different from consent, and that's what happened, isn't it?
No.
Those are all the questions that I have.
Remember, Bud is on her side. He's just preparing her for what may happen in court.
What I was endeavoring to do there is set up a scenario where a reasonable person who's not connected to either side, a judge, can say, gosh, you know, the accused person's scenario of consensual sex, as it unfolded that evening, plausible. And if it's simply plausible, doesn't have to be true, if it's simply plausible, there's a reasonable doubt and my client gets acquitted. So that's all I have to do in a cross-examination is establish plausibility.
Tell me about how you feel what you just went through. How'd that leave you feeling?
Nervous, I suppose. I sort of had an idea of what to anticipate just speaking with others who have experienced testifying at their at trial.
I'm sure since you've gone to the police, you have looked more into what the situation is like for victims who are going, for survivors who are going before the court system. You can see that the odds are definitely stacked against you, that there will be a conviction. How does that leave you feeling?
At times, I question why I bothered, why I've taken a year of my life to continue reliving this when I could have just left it there and moved forward with my life, as many choose to do. To be honest, I guess it depends on what my larger objective was. I recognize the likelihood of conviction wasn't necessarily there, but there were other objectives that I can obtain through raising awareness, ensuring that other women on my campus are safe. So I wanted others to be aware of that charges had been laid. So I did meet some of the objectives in reporting initially, even if justice in the way of the judicial system might not necessarily be achieved.
The journalists at the Fifth Estate had many discussions about the possible impacts of this story on any future trial. As you just heard, Mandy Gray had several reasons for coming forward. You can watch the full documentary on the program's website, cbc.ca/fifth.